My name is Parrots, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be also helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have a list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Francis will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Francis. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Peter will read the steps.
My name is Peter, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Randy will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Randy, I'm an alcoholic. These are the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Jen.
So close.
Thank you. All right. Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. My sobriety date is November 27th, 2007, and Stacy's my sponsor. I'd like to thank Jen for having me speak up here. It's a complete honor and privilege to be speaking at my home group tonight. For anybody new out there, you've just stumbled into like the greatest group, very social, very enthusiastic, very recovery-based, and I'd really like to welcome you genuinely from my heart. I am completely privileged to be up here tonight to tell my story, and I hope to God that it helps somebody here. Some of you may or may not know me or my story, and almost a year ago to the day, I had a relapse after 12 and a half years of sobriety. And that happened for a multitude of reasons. It was slow and it was steady, and I think it was a couple weeks ago when Lisa was up here and said that the only thing worse than an alcoholic's problems are an alcoholic's solutions. And that was so apropos for me. That and taking my will back. And in the big book, it talks about that strange, peculiar mental twist that's hallmark of an alcoholic. And that's kind of how I can explain it, because nothing, no matter what reasons there were, and there were so many in my mind, none of them substantiated where I ended up and what really happened to me. Or what really I did, actually. And it was slow, it was steady. It was started with taking my will back little by little, making my own decisions, not checking in with a sponsor, not sharing my thoughts with my sponsor, which precede my actions. It ended in kind of living a double life. And at that time, a series of life events happened, one of which culminated in my father dying, and it was at that point that I just shut down, and it was no more God, no more nothing. It was like the game is on, and I was at war with the whoever it was. And it was very clear. It was like I had my AA world, and then I had my outside world, and I got involved in some really bad things. I ended up waking up in jail. After I had relapsed, and I had to use at that point to cover up all the guilt, the shame, and all the feelings around the behavior that I was doing. And it talks about on page 72 and 73 in the book that the alcoholic lives a double life more than anyone else, and that's the number one cause of relapse, not sharing everything with somebody, all of our deep, dark secrets, and how we only think we lose egoism and fear. And I really had, and I never thought ever in a million years that I would ever pick up. I had been sober since I was 20, and I really loved AA. And just at some point, it was over for me. And so when I woke up that morning, when I was in Rikers Island, I woke up and I looked around and I swear I knew where I was vaguely, and I wasn't sure if it was a dream or not, but I looked around and I saw the dorm and I thought to myself, oh, like I thought I speak here. I've taken meetings here, you know, I know where I am. And I realized that, oh my God, you know, I'm in bed for some reason and I'm not leaving so quickly this time. And I sat there and I looked up and I saw the ceiling and I thought, like, how did I get here? Like, for the life of me, I had no idea. It was like that peculiar mental brownout, twist, blackout. Like, wow. Like, I knew how I got there, you know, but how did I get there? You know, like, that was the question. And I got out of bed, and I traded my jacket for some cookies, peanut butter, and a phone call. You know, because I didn't even have a phone call at that point. And I walked over to the phone, and instinctively, I just called my sponsor. You know, because, like, what am I supposed to do in that moment? Like, what do I do every, you know, I call my sponsor. And the most amazing thing about the whole thing was that, like, he answered the phone. You know, like, I totally was, I couldn't believe it when he was like, hello? It's like, Stacy? You know, like, and then I proceeded to tell him where I was, which, of course, he already knew. Like, I thought it was some, like, big secret or something. And, thank you. Not only did he answer the phone, but, like, he was absolutely instrumental. I would never, I don't know what I would have done in that time. It was just divine union that you should be my sponsor, because I don't know that anyone else could have at that time. And it was, like, 1 minute, one thing in front of the other, and it just hit me, like, how crazy it was. You know, when I was back before the relapse and during the relapse, I made so many decisions based on dishonesty, anger, and greed. You know, that this feeling of, like, if I just have enough outside stuff, it'll fix the inside. And I could just zoom past all this life stuff and never have to deal with it and never have to look at it. I'm going to be okay. You know, I'm just going to be okay. And it was like, I realized in that moment, oh my God, like, I'm in jail and it's not okay. You know, and I'm worried about all this outside stuff. And now I have these green pajamas and, like, nothing. Like, not commissary, nothing. You know, and it hit me, like, the ironic, like, how crazy that was. And I knew in that moment, like, things had to be different. I knew that, you know, I knew I had to come back to AA. I had to get sober again, and I knew I had to be here. And I don't know if it was in jail or when I got back here or what, but I talked with Stacy, and I remember he asked me, like, are you willing to go to any length? And it's like, I looked down, you know, I'm wearing green. Yeah, I'm red. You know, what length can I possibly go to? Anything's a pleasure at that point. And so there were some conditions, and one was Tuesday and Thursday meetings, which, okay. Second was to read the big book at 6 o'clock on Tuesdays. The third one was to call him every day. And the fourth one was to get a commitment, which he had found for me, which was to clean up, to mop the floor in the Duke room. That was my first commitment when I came back. And I have to tell you, it was so great to have a commitment. Like, I, whatever, you know, like, okay, great. Like, I was so honored to, like, be out and be coming back here. And walking back into this room was one of the scariest things I've ever had to do in my whole life, maybe besides talking tonight, but whatever. I was so afraid of, like, what people's reactions would be. And, you know, my behavior put this group in a really public view and light, and I truly want to apologize for that. It was not my intention at all. And I pray to God that nobody ran away from AA, like, oh my God, this is AA, what a bunch of nuts. It's not AA, it's not Atlantic Group, it was me and my behavior. And the worst thing about my relapse was disappointing loved ones, friends, family. I really want to speak to the newcomer here, and not just the newcomer, but people who are struggling, people with time, people who might relapse, who might pick up, who are just sitting here, like, maybe even wanting to just rather die than live, because I've been in all those places in sobriety. And there is nothing out there. If anything else, there's just nothing out there. And, like, one of the big things I pray is that I could be the one to relapse. I could be the one to go to jail for everybody in this room. Like, nobody else has to go through what I just went through. And, you know, 2 weeks I'll have a year coming back, and it's just been like one day at a time. You know, this year I've been really surrendered and really quiet, and it's helped a tremendous amount for me. You know, my anniversary this year falls on Thanksgiving Day, and that is so true of really where I am. And gratitude, just just thanksgiving and gratitude. And we don't always get second chances. I'm blessed to have a second chance. I pray to God, like, no one else has to roll that dice and find out they don't have a second chance. You know, I was on my way here. I was walking south on Lexington Avenue, and I ran into someone who just started, like, babbling and yelling in the street, you know, like, toward me. And I knew the person from here, and I was like, wow, oh my God. You know, and I kept walking, and then boom, I bump into someone else who's on a relapse, and I know it, and his breath, and I smell it. And I'm like, come to the meeting with me tonight, you know? But he was off to go meet somebody walking north on Lexington Avenue, and I thought, holy cow. Like, you know, this is where I'm supposed to be tonight. This is where God wants me to be tonight, here talking to you guys and walking south on Lexington Avenue, you know, like toward my home group. Like, I'm so honored. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Lewis.
Hi, I'm Lewis. I'm an alcoholic. And this is my home group. I'm a little bit nervous tonight. I'm a lot nervous tonight. My sobriety date is 17 May 1999. I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor. And I've been working the steps to the best of my ability. I've only been a member, although I've been sober since 99, I've only been a member of this group for about 4 years. So I didn't get sober here. And I would say for most of that 6 year, 5.5 year period, although I wasn't drinking and I did go to meetings, I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. And it's not a fun place to be. I mean, I didn't like myself. I was really depressed. And, you know, my life would go up and down. And this is without, you know, without drinking. Can I lower the mic? Okay. Never mind. So, it's a little disjointed because I am kind of nervous. But in any event, I came to AA late, what I consider late in life. I was 45 when I got sober. And I started drinking when I was in my late teens. So that's a good 20 years. And 25. Math is not my subject. And for a long time, alcoholism was my best friend. And it served me well. I mean, I guess that's why I drank for so long. I mean, it got me through graduate school and 2 graduate degrees from reputable schools. And I was an officer in the United States military. And, you know, I accomplished some stuff. I got married. You know, I had a job. All those great, you know, all the things that from externally, if you look at, you know, this is, you know, this person has a good life. And during all that time, I was desperately unhappy. I heard someone say here once, and it described me, that I could be in a room full of people and feel alone. And I pretty much always felt like that, you know, very isolated from people. I would say I didn't have, you know, any close relationships. Including my ex-wife. And I couldn't really, you know, at the time, I couldn't put my finger on it. And my solution for all these things was, you know, have a drink. And as I said, for a long time, it worked. You know, I did get a job. I did get through school. So I wasn't... I was able... To use a hackneyed phrase, I was what I thought was a functional alcoholic until I was no longer a functional alcoholic, because where it also took me was to jail a few times. I remember the last time I was in jail, I called a friend, and he looked at me through the bars. Some of the people know what I do. And he goes, I was in Central Booking in Brooklyn, and he goes, "You're supposed to be on the other side." I go, "I know, Phil, just get me out of here." But in any event, what got me here towards the end, I mean, at the end, my marriage broke up. I was a partner in a small firm. My partners basically said, "Here's your money, get out." I tried to work for myself for about 6 months at the very end until I fired myself. Now, you have to be really pathetic to fire yourself. And it was probably the best management decision I ever made in that 6 months. And so that by time I, came into these rooms, I couldn't read the Post. And this is true. There are people in here who know this is not an exaggeration. I could barely put two sentences together. I was agoraphobic. I basically wanted to jump in front of the A train on a daily basis going to meetings. I was suicidal. Basically, it was my fear of a bloody death that kept me, from killing myself. And this lasted a good year and a half. I was on disability because I couldn't work. So as the sponsor once, an old sponsor once said, the American dream is supposed to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, start out in a bad place, go to college. He goes, "You went from Yale to jail. You're supposed to do it in it's the reverse of the way you're supposed to do it." I said, "Thanks." But in any event, so as I said, I got sober in 1999, basically because I had no other choice. It was that or kill myself, and I mean that literally. Because I was dying. And I basically, as I've often done in my life, took what I now see is the easy way out. In other words, I was going to meetings. In fact, I was pretty much going to meetings all the time because I had nothing else to do. I wasn't working. But as I've often, I had a sponsor in name only. In other words, I wasn't really working, the program. And things got a little bit better. I didn't want to kill myself anymore. And, I went back to work. But they kind of plateaued. I got a little bit better, but not really. And then things started, going downhill again. I'm very lucky I didn't relapse. And I know things were bad because I didn't want to be with me. So I can imagine how other people felt about it. And a good friend of mine who's a member of this group, Jim H., basically said, I can't repeat his exact words because we're not allowed to use profanity, but he basically said, "Your life's in the dumps." I will paraphrase. "Why don't you come? I go to this great meeting. Come with me." He was talking about the Sunday night downtown meeting. And I started going to that meeting, and you know what? Everyone was happy there. People seemed to be doing well. You guys had what I want, what I wanted. And this was 6 years into sobriety. Anyway, to make a long story short, eventually I became a member of the group. I got a sponsor at this group. I started working the steps, although diffidently. And my life has improved beyond my wildest dreams. And not through material things, although I am employed and, I make a living and all that kind of good stuff. But in the sense of for the first time in my life, I would say, I'm really happy. I'm content with myself. And more importantly, I think it shows. I mean, this year I said I was married and I'm divorced, and I'm now engaged to another woman to be married. I would say it's bad judgment on her part, but luckily for me, she disagrees with me on that issue. And, oh, great, I can wrap it up soon. In any event, even a year ago, if you had asked me that, I would have said, again, I can't use my exact response, but I would have said, no way. The things that are happening, I would not believe, even a relatively short time ago, I would not believe is happening to me. And basically, I owe it all, I would say in large part to this group, you know, to what it's done to me. In other words, it's encouraged me. It's the medicine that we need as alcoholics, and I found it here. And I had tried other places, other groups. For me, they didn't work. So I want to thank all of you people for my sobriety. I know I tried. I could not do it myself. So I want to thank all of you people for my sobriety, and thank you very much.
Our main speaker tonight is Barry.
Thank you. Oh, I need my water. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Hi, everyone. I'm Barry, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Bob, for asking me to speak, and thank you to this group just for being what you are, and everyone in it. You guys are amazing. And also, I just, you know, when we raise the hands, the newcomer, I love to see how many people there are. Welcome. And welcome if you're new. Welcome if you're coming back off of a relapse. I know what that is. And it just takes a lot of courage to stand up and say, you know, I'm new. I mean, I know that when I was out there, you know, from age 14 to 28, I did not know why I could not quit. I had no idea. I was baffled by it. And so it's just a real pleasure to have you here. I'm so grateful you're here, and keep coming back. And also, the other thing is if you don't hear something in either my story or Jen's story or Lewis's story, you know, keep coming until you do. Because what I had to do in the beginning is identify rather than, you know, because I was looking for a way out. I always am. I'm fearful. I'm looking for a way out. And so I was judging and looking at what I didn't identify with. And so until I switched it and started realizing that I'm like you guys, you know, I didn't have a lot of hope. So just those two things kept it simple for me. But so if I can get through this without saying like and I'll be really happy. Anyways, so let's see. I know, I got to break the ice. And I'm so nervous. I just have to surrender to it. That's all I know what to do is surrender to it. So that's out. Okay. So all I know how to do is share about, you know, what it was like when I took my first drink. And, well, let me also just say my sobriety date is July 31st, 1998. I am grateful that my beautiful sponsor Maureen is here. My grand sponsor Heidi is here. My great-grand sponsor Ava is here. My beautiful sponsees, I don't know how many of them are here. I saw Nikki and Jaina, and I'm not sure who else, but I love all of you guys. I couldn't do it without you, and there's absolutely no way. And all of the sponsors that have, you know, helped me within my 10 years. I have nuggets stored inside of me from all of those women that I still use today and will continue to. So my first drink was about age 14, and what that drink did for me is it took away my shyness, it took away my insecurity and my low self-worth. I felt like I had a secret weapon to life, and you know, I didn't even really like it, I didn't like smoking cigarettes when I first started, but I continued to do it until I did like it, and soon enough, I sort of liked the drinking. I liked the fact that I didn't feel the way that I was feeling prior to it. And so I just continued to pursue that, and at about age, this started at 14, by 15 I had lost control completely, and I was suffering lots of consequences. I was just right out of the gates. I was in my first outpatient rehab at 15. I was in my first AA meeting at 15, and that was joyful. I was, you know, it was in Salem, Oregon, too. So, yeah, and I was there, and and obviously I didn't think that I needed it at all. So, 15, I was such a young girl, so I just continued to try and get around, you know, continue to be able to drink. And what that looked like was cheating, lying, stealing, manipulating, you know, just being a terror, you know, getting what I wanted, working the system, lying, and including family, friends, and authorities, and doing whatever I had to do to get around it, to not get in trouble, to just scoot by the law so I wouldn't get, you know, totally in trouble, even though I did end up, you know, in places. But so that continued, and again, so I lost so it was just out of control by this point. And this book talks about, I'm so glad this is here. This book talks about that we have a spiritual disease, and it's, you know, physical and mental and spiritual. And I need to come here to fix the spiritual part and the mental part. The physical part went away when I stopped, you know, after the cravings are gone, the physical is gone, but the spiritual and mental I am left with in a big way. And that's why I come to meetings and I maintain my recovery. You know, I have to continue to do this one day at a time. And if it's too much for me to think about, I don't have to think about tomorrow. I can think about right now, today. So the consequences continue. And I'll just talk a little bit about the obsession of the mind and the phenomena of craving that, you know, ensued. And so as a young girl, you know, that went all the way up to 18, and I started getting a lot of people on my back, and I just wanted them off. So I started getting sober and cleaning up my act for them. And this didn't work. What I know today is nothing in this program will work unless you're doing it for you. I mean, I follow my sponsor's direction because I know that I'm going to get the benefit from it. I don't do it for her, you know. Even though sometimes I do. But you know what I mean. Like, because... So, but at the end of the day, I know in my heart of hearts that I'm here for myself. And let's see. So, I'm going to talk like 5 more minutes about the story and then try to get into recovery. You know, let's see. So there I was. And at 18, I had to start cleaning up a little bit. And I did, but not really. I continued on with my alcoholism and chasing it, and I ended up getting a good job at 18, and it took me to Europe, and I just pursued it there, and I just kept on going. And all I know is that when I'm untreated, I have the obsession of alcoholism. And for sure, when I decide to put it inside my body, the physical craving takes off and the obsession of the mind. And I did things like, I would go into physical fits of rage, I would bang my head up against the wall, I would punch things. I went on a vacation once to Indonesia, you know, with my boyfriend, rented a house, had money coming in, wired in, and I started drinking, and I knew that they weren't going to drink like me, so I got on the plane and flew home, 24 hours. So that's the obsession. I needed to be where I could control the environment and get as much as I wanted all the time. And so things like that would happen, and you know, as a result of the alcoholism, I ended up in a lot of rehabs, 3 psych wards. At about age 24 to 28, I was in and outside of these treatment centers. And like I said, I was still doing it for other people. At this stage in the juncture, it wasn't family that was really on my back so much, it was work. So I said, okay, I know I have a problem, but I wasn't ready to quit. But I said, I'll try rehab. So I went to rehab just to buy some time to, you know, shut these people up. And so I would be there. And I would act out in rehab. I would find men. I would just act out. I wouldn't take any of the tools that were being laid down at my feet. And I continued to be sick and suffering and crazy. And I was in and outside of AA. And I was, you know, I wasn't working the program like it was, like I do now. I was doing it my way. I was doing it 50% my way. I was doing it at my convenience. I wasn't consistent with anything. It was really about my convenience and what I wanted. If I was on 70th Street, I'd go there. You know, I didn't have a home group. If I was in the Lower East Side, I'd go there. It came after the rest of my life, and today it comes before my entire life. And I'm so grateful for that, because everything that I learn. I mean, you guys have taught me how to be a woman. You've taught me how to walk with integrity and grace. You know, there's so many tools. Any problem that I have today, whether it's inside or in my outer world, I can bring to someone in this program, and I can get amazing advice, amazing experience, amazing wisdom today. And I'm just so grateful for that. And, you know, these meetings are very social, and they're very scary. And I wasn't into that at first at all. But by coming here, I'm able to be social here, and I can take that on the outside because I need those skills. I mean, I'm an adult woman. I need to be around those kinds of things. So AA taught me that, and I just went off on a tangent there. So we'll go back to the rehab. So going 4 years in the rehabs and finally getting out of those, the one thing that ended up happening, it was at 28, I had... Well, let me just say this. As a result of my alcoholism, I spiraled down. I thought that it would be a good idea to move into a house where they were dealing cocaine and selling crack and running an escort service out of. I thought that would be a great idea. So I stayed there for 10 months. I really went crazy. I really suffer from a mental illness. I just want to be really clear with you. I suffer from a mental illness. Really. And I would do things like shave my head, shave my eyebrows completely off, cut my hair. You know, this is towards the end. This is like in 1997 or so. And, you know, they were even scared of me. And again, I was still so ashamed. I couldn't stop. I had these people. I was seeking lower companionship. And they were looking at me like, are you nuts? Like, you have a chance, you know. But I just... It didn't matter to me. I couldn't stop. I could not stop. I remember I had received big books from the treatment centers, and I would be in my little apartment drinking, and I would take this out, and I'd be like, ugh, you know, save me. What's in this book that's going to save me? And I remember one of them has bite marks in it, you know. I get really crazy. It wouldn't. I couldn't stop, you know. And that goes back to the fact that I like to think about this. Before this book was written, you know, they just had each other. So the real thing about this program is one alcoholic talking to another. You know, that's the real, real thing here. And that's why we listen. And that's why I listen. And, you know, going back to when I was, all the way, just real quick, this is important. It was a revelation for me. I realized that when I was 15 and I was in an outpatient center, and this counselor was trying to counsel me and talk to me, and I don't think I had been to that one first meeting yet. And I said, are you an alcoholic? Do you understand this? I wasn't even willing to hear what she had to say. I could tell she was from academia. Well, I was assuming all of 15 years old. I didn't know anything. But I thought she was just a doctor, and I just couldn't hear her. I could not hear her. And today, I mean, alcoholics, you guys have saved my life. You know, I come to you, you've walked in my shoes, you know what it's like, you know the obsession, you know all of this. And the hope, when I see people that have gone before me, they give me hope and they give me encouragement that I can do the same thing. So we're not at 15 minutes yet? That's crazy. Whoa! Okay. So this is good. Then, so at 28, I decided to throw in the towel, and I was coming out of another... Well, I still had the mental obsession. It was just so strong. And I was in a psych ward up here at Cornell Medical Center on a lockdown unit for 2 weeks. And they would let everyone else go on smoke walks. Well, let me just say, like, prior to getting to that psych ward, I was in my house with a stranger. You know, yeah, a stranger. And I was completely helpless, completely powerless. I was so out of control, I just couldn't stop. And even prior to that, you know, as a result of alcoholism, I mean, I've almost died. That didn't stop me. The consequences just were never enough. They were never enough. And I really needed a divine intervention. And you only get this thing when you get it. And it's such a gift. Oh, my goodness. And if you can hold on to it and spread it around, it's amazing. And so I was... in that psych ward, and the mental obsession was just haunting me. And I was very verbal about it. And so they didn't let me go on smoke walks. I couldn't even get out. I thought about escaping because one woman did and came back, like, you know, with Thorazine and the strap down, whatever. And So this social worker said, you need another treatment center. And I was like, okay, are you going to pay for it? You know, but I ended up going. And at this point, it's just what I needed. And I'm not saying everyone needs to come through it, the treatment centers, but I definitely had the opportunity to do it. And that's how I looked at it today, is an opportunity, because I was surrounded by professional people that could help me realize that if I feel, it's not going to kill me. Because at the end of the day, I have trouble feeling. I have trouble just being a human and feeling and realizing that they pass. And that's basically why I drank, because I just didn't want to feel. Didn't want to feel anything. I've sat and asked myself, like, why am I an alcoholic? Why am I not, you know, like, I'm not from a family of an alcoholic, so I can't blame them. But in the book, it says, you know, most alcoholics, they don't even know in their own heart why they drink. And it talks about solving the riddle. Like, it's, we can't solve the riddle. We just are what we are, and I know what the results are, and I know what the consequences are. You know, and the other thing I like to say is I'm not even from a family of alcoholics that I know of in that first generation. The disease strikes anyone. The disease strikes anyone. Now, did I drink myself into it? Maybe, you know, from habit and just continuing to go and loss of control? Maybe. Obviously. So then I went to that treatment center and I came out of that. The psych ward, I went to the treatment center, and I finally told the social worker, I said, I'll go. So I went, and it involved me leaving New York. So I went to Arizona. And that somehow shifted me. It really shifted me. And I got there, and I just decided, what do I have to lose? Let me just throw everything in. Let me just do what they're saying. Let me not look around and see what I can cheat and lie and work and get on my, you know, get my own way and all this nonsense. Let me follow the rules. Let me do things by the book. You know, let me grow up, basically. So I ended up staying there for 30 days. And they said, oh, you know, we recommend that you also do some extended care. And I said, oh, okay. And they had all said that to me. And I said, okay, I will this time. And I went, and they said, we recommend it, like an all-women's facility, you know, you can get more real, and they can see through you, and no, no, no. And I said, fine, and I went through the women's facility, and it was 4 months, and I got into the treatment bubble, and I started feeling my feelings. I took advantage of all of their tools these people were giving me, and right when I walked in, they said, you know, they laid down the requirements. They were a big 12-step facility as well. You have to go to meetings every day, and you have to get a sponsor. So I did that, and I got a sponsor right away. And I didn't walk around the meeting saying, like, who should I get? Does she sound right? Her, him, who? I just chose the first woman that I saw speaking. And it worked out. And she was very enthusiastic about the steps. And so I started doing steps 1, 2, and 3 with her. And I knew that I was powerless. I didn't have a problem with that. I easily could write down how I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol. I mean, over alcohol. And I mean, I knew. And then coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, I didn't really have the luxury to stop and, like, fight that step. So I just said, yeah. And then the third step, making a decision to turn my will over to God. Another thing I just want to back this up with, it's actions, you know? It's being in motion, moving, taking actions. And that's what I was doing. This is what recovery is. You know, not trying to sit and figure it out and think about it too long. And, you know, sort of, you know, I need to stay in movement, like faith, moving forward. And I do want to share how I came to believe in a power greater than myself. You know, at some point, I did go through a phase of fighting it. I was, is there a God? Really? I don't know. You know, and I spent, you know, I stayed on that for about a year, actually. And there's no proof, or it's just a waste of time. So I had to stop debating. I had to stop debating and just believe. And I do believe today. And there's a lot of little things you can do to strengthen your relationship with God, you know, like I can say I keep one, a little spiritual experience journal, and I write them down because I forget. You know, and that could be where I felt God or where something just lined up perfectly or just whatever I interpret as a spiritual experience, because I need to go back and look at those because I will forget, you know? And I need encouragement. I need encouragement that, you know, this thing works and that I am being looked out for, and that there is a power greater than myself. And the other thing that made me realize that I am, that there is a God is, I mean, I'm a miracle. We all are. We all are standing here and we're miracles. You're sitting, I'm standing. I mean, like I said, I did not know why I could not quit drinking. I was so ashamed of that. But I came here and I was such a sigh of relief to know that this is a disease. You know, my body is different than other people out there. You know, and I suffer from the physical craving and the mental obsession. And I have that spiritual malady. But literally my physical body is different. I react different to alcohol. And that was just such a relief. And, you know, the fact that I have this opportunity to live today is, that's proof that there is a God, you know? That's proof that there's a God. And so then she said, you know, on to step four, and I did my step four, and it was an absolute nightmare. I couldn't stand it because she was, in a way, scared of me or my story, and she made me go to her sponsor's house and do this step, and they, like, took me hostage for 2 days. And it really wasn't fun. It was exhausting. It was just exhausting, but so worth it. So worth it. Just to let someone in on all of my secrets, you know, just take the shame away. Like, get it off. And I'm just not that special anyways. As unique and special that I think I am, no. You know, they've done it. They've done it. So let it go, Barry, you know? And just for me, being able to just take that inventory and get inside and house clean, that's how I stay sober today. I mean, I still have stuff, you know, that I have to do my mini four steps. I mean, that's why we have steps 10, 11, and 12, the maintenance. But that big overhaul, that first one was really beneficial for me. And it wasn't like this wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, like boom, white light, but it was... I just felt like I was doing the slow cleaning, and I was letting people in, and I was becoming a little more human, you know, a little more human. And then we did, that was my step five, and then I did six and seven. And I have to say, my first time around six and seven was pretty vague. I didn't get it. I'll come back to that. So, and then on steps eight and nine, I thought that this is going to be the easiest step in the world. I've been saying, you know, I've been a big blob of I'm sorry for 10 years. But that's not what steps eight and nine are. You know, it's about making amends. And it was terrifying. I'm not going to lie, but I did it. I have to. What do I have to lose? I have a lot to lose, you know? So I just continued to walk on and do these things. Bookend the amends, you know, cling to my sponsor. I can't say enough thanks to the other recovering people, how much patience they've had with me. I can't say enough thanks for that. The patience and the love, you know? This one speaker I love, she says, you know, when you come to AA, we're going to love you until you can love yourselves. She says, we're going to love you until you can love other people. And I love that, and I really hung on to that, because that's what that's about for me, what this is about. And so eight and nine were torturous, but I did them, and they were torturous, but a little bit magical. They really opened me up, and I just felt free. But it's scary because you don't know what reaction you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to have to deal with. But it's any length. These are spiritual principles. So God is with us when we take these steps, you know. God is with us when we take these steps. We're walking in line with His will by doing this. So I could, you know, I have this one sponsor that used to say, it's okay if you have fear. Just do it anyways. And sometimes I needed to keep it really simple like that. Just continue to walk forward. With the fear. Who cares? Show up anyways. And showing up is half the battle. So then 10, 11, and 12, you know, the maintenance steps, taking our daily inventory, meditation, and then this is 12, carrying the message. You know, carrying this message. And it talks about in the book having, in the doctor's opinion, about we need a psychic change. And I slowly got that through doing the steps and through showing up. And I've done AA where I just show up to meetings. I've done that, and you can see where it got me. It got me back out there. So we come here, and we just have so much to uncover and, you know, so much beauty that's hidden. And that's what the steps, you know, have done is they're just an amazing tool to open up. And a result of that is we stay sober, because I'm not in pain anymore like I was. I'm not this, you know, walking around in this pain and this feeling like I need to cheat and lie and scare it all the time. You know, because I've done that initial step work. And I don't want it to sound complicated to someone that's new or someone who hasn't done it, because it's not. It's not. You just do it. And the other thing that I have to hang on to is I'm not here to get an A in AA. Because I suffer from perfectionism. And if I can't do it right, I'm not going to do it. Wrong. Do it anyways. Do it anyways. And I get so much from my my sponsees. They blow me away. They just blow me away. Such a gift. Such a gift to have them in my life. I can't even tell you. And I just want to go back to, at 5 years sober, I'm going to go back to talking about 6 and 7, removing our defects of character. At 5 years sober, I was tired of AA. I was done. You guys weren't entertaining me anymore. I've heard all the drunkologues, and I'm just over it. Well, so I went to a person in AA that I really respected his program, and I said, what? I said, first of all, I'm depressed. I'm very depressed. And what would you do in this situation? What would you do? And he's like, well, you know, are you reading page 63? Are you praying in the morning? Are you, you know, doing... So he gave me this little sort of formula, I mean, whatever, little things to do. He said, you know, start doing these, and he launched right into me. When's the last four step you've done? You know, fourth and fifth and sixth and... have you done a sixth and seventh? And so I said, whatever. And I started doing his formula. And it was, you know, about taking the time in the morning to pray and turning my will over to God. It was about page 86 in the big book, where it kind of sets us up for our day. If you turn to that, it talks about upon awakening, we do this. Upon retiring at night, we do this. I mean, everything is in here for us. And that's the other, this is our guide, you know, our guide to life. It's very simple. It's in here. It's not complicated. And he said, the other thing I was really suffering from is just very low self-worth. And what that was making me do was hide in the meetings and not like anyone. And I wasn't reaching out to anyone. I wasn't smiling. I wasn't getting to know anyone new. Because I was, you know, hiding, and I was insecure and hated everyone, and I was judging. And he goes, do you have a home group? Do you have a service commitment? I had none of the above. And he goes, wow, it's time for you to stop being an observer and become a participant. And so I said, okay. And he's like, come to this meeting, my home group, with me. And I got there early. And I just took the direction, because I was depressed, and I know what that leads to. And he said, start reaching out to the newcomer. And, you know, I have nothing to give. If you think you have nothing to give, you're wrong. You do. You're sober. You know, you are wrong. And so I started reaching out, and just by taking these simple actions. And I started applying 6 and 7 in a way that he described that wasn't as vague, and it was an action step. And it was, I'll just say it quickly, it was something like, you know, admitting what it is, which I'll just say low self-esteem, applying the defect, you know, and it can be fear. I mean, character defects can be, I mean, I have 5 major ones. Applying, there's a prayer in our book that's, you know, exactly for the 7 steps, saying that prayer, and then acting as if it's been removed, cooperating with God that it's been removed. I have a part here. You know, if I'm so low self-esteemed and low self-worth, I need to act as if I'm not. And I need to reach out and look people in the eye and do it anyways. And soon enough, God will come into my life, and he will make it easier for me, and he will make it a joy for me to do. Because all of a sudden, I'll be part of life. I'll be part of this life. And I just can't thank you guys enough. I know my time is running out, but I'm serious. I can't thank you enough. I love alcoholics. I love AA. We are such special people. We're special. And and I just want to say, what else? I don't know. Just thank you, everyone, for being here, and thank you for asking me to be of service. Thanks.